Welcome to the Journey to Midwifery podcast. This is a podcast for and about midwives. This is the place where midwives come to share their stories. I am your host, Amber Wilson, a midwife myself. I felt called to this journey of sharing the stories of midwives around the globe, and I hope you will find as much joy listening as I do interviewing. Remember, life is about the journey.
Welcome again to another episode of Journey to Midwifery podcast. My name is Jamie Gerton and I am guest hosting for Amber today. And today I have another midwife named Jamie, also a certified nurse midwife. We just discussed it. We spell our name the same, J-A-M-I-E. And so Jamie, welcome and introduce yourself.
Thanks so much, Jamie. I am thrilled to be here and chat with you. I'm Jamie Pelaez. I'm a certified nurse midwife. And I am currently practicing in Johnson City, Tennessee.
I love Tennessee. Okay, we always start with, how did you come to midwifery? What is your journey? So where did you start? And walk us through training and then school and boards and then kind of the jobs you've had since then and then where you are today.
Sure. I wish that this kind of story was a little bit more romantic. But I got incredibly lucky in how I ended up in midwifery. At this point in my life, I know 100% it is the job that I was meant to do. But I never wanted to be a nurse. Like, I didn't know about midwives, especially in nursing school. But I was one of those students that went to undergrad as like a marine biology major. And then you find out that that's not swimming with dolphins. And then you, you know, don't want to look at amoeba. So you change your major and kind of did that lovely cyclical bounced around, didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. And I am fortunate enough to have an older sister who is a nurse midwife. And at the time was a nurse. And she was the one who kind of was just like, hey, you're not going to graduate if you don't pick a major, like go to nursing school.
I know. I'm your sister, and I can just hear her sister is Sam. And we've interviewed her before on the podcast, but I can just hear Sam saying that. I'm like, sister, you got to get your stuff in line.
100%. And I am so thankful. So I went to nursing school at the University of South Carolina. I was lucky enough to be at a big college where they had a lot of options, and that's where I landed. And then I hated nursing. I was specifically nursing school. I just remember, again, you know how nursing school is so different than being a nurse, right? But I was doing my like preceptorship and I was on a cardiovascular ICU in Columbia, South Carolina. And every day I gave every patient like 18 meds. All of the blood pressure meds, like all of the chronic conditions, and we would discharge patients to see them back 2 days later. And I just really struggled with like feeling like you had any like positive impact on these people, right? Like, but we were doing anything in kind of this cycle. And that was senior year. And that was the year that my sister Sam started midwifery school. And she pretty much told me the same thing. Hey, apply to midwifery school, be a midwife. You'll love it. I promise. I know, really. I got so lucky. So I remember applying. I knew that I was going to move to Salt Lake City anyway after graduation. I had visited my sister there many times. I fell in love with the mountains, the culture there. So I knew no matter what, I was going to move out there and find a job. So I applied to the University of Utah because that is the nurse midwifery program there. That is where my sister was at. I did not apply anywhere else. Like I am a horrible, I feel like, counselor in terms of like, how do you narrow it down? I'm like, I just wanted to move to the mountains and ski. But when I went to interview, they were still doing in-person interviews at the time. This was all pre-COVID. The gal that I interviewed with, the nurse midwife I interviewed with, like changed everything for me. And that was Ann Daenerys. And sitting in that interview, like talking to her, hearing her speak about midwife, like midwifery, even asking me what I thought, which at the time I feel like I had no idea. That was what convinced me. I was like, no, I want to be her. Like, I want to be a nurse midwife. Though I had never worked with them, I had never seen a midwifery delivery. I had seen one delivery as, you know, a nursing student of a grand mal tip who like spat it out in one push with her epidural with like 30 people in the room. And it was all like beautiful and, you know, but it wasn't, even in that moment, I didn't know that like birth was what I would be drawn to, or, you know, women's health and reproductive health. But that's how I ended up in midwifery, was because my sister told me to, which is, again, not the most romantic story.
No, but it's very straightforward. And I think anybody that has a sister will appreciate that opinion. I feel like sometimes when sister's like, this is what you need to go do. You're like, okay, sister. Okay. Okay. So you went to Utah, and then I'm assuming you got accepted, and that's where you went to school. Yeah. What was your program like? How long was it? And did you work? Did you not work? Did you have family stuff going on in the background, or were you just skiing in all your free time?
Those 3 years. So Utah, the University of Utah's program is incredible. I have nothing but positive things to say about it. And again, I feel like I got lucky. It was the perfect type of program for me, because it was a all in person, like 3 year, you go to class, like there was no hybrid, no online piece, no, like any of that. And that's the kind of learner that I am. And you were, you know, with your little cohort of 11 people for 8-9 semesters. So I was so thankful to have gotten into that program, having done zero research about anything. And honestly, my favorite part about the program specifically was that it's a faculty practice. So all of the gals that teach you, all of these nurse midwives, are actively practicing, and they practice within the practice that you do your rotations with, like at least the majority of them. So you may talk about a concept in class one day, and then you go to clinic with that same midwife later that week. And really, there's like really great continuity. They know what you should know. They know where you are in the program. Like, and you're learning from people who actively practice. Like, it was just a really beautiful model, a really beautiful design for the type of learner that I am. I do not recommend this to anyone, any student at all. I worked full time the whole time, going straight through. I graduated, I got in, and then I was like, shoot, I should probably find a labor and delivery job. So I did get a labor and delivery job and worked full time nights the whole time in the program. And I wouldn't recommend that to any student. I do feel like there are just parts of that memory that I just don't have because of like sleep deprivation and likely not, again, the safest approach. This was before ACNM's statement on sleep for students came out. I'm not sure if you're familiar, but now they designate like every 16 hours of work, they have to have a 4 hour break of uninterrupted rest. Like, they can't work the night before they go to a shift. There's like parameters to protect patients and students. And I was not counseled at all to keep working in school. I do want that to be, you know, on the record. They advised against it, and my stubborn like 22-year-old self wanted the experience. Yeah. And it was beautiful in some ways. Like, everything I did in school and everything I learned, I could directly apply even to just like how I approached patients as a nurse at the community hospital I worked at. Like, it was, my whole world was like women's. So it made for some like really rich learning, right? But I do not recommend it.
I was going to ask you why. I did the same thing in my midwifery program. I worked nights full time, right up until like the last semester. And I have the same, I did not have kids. I was not married until right at the end. So that's all I did for 2 years, as I worked and I did midwifery school. And it is a bit of a blur. Like, you are just head down doing your thing. And then you come up after graduation and you're like, oh, that's what the rest of the world is like.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Okay. Well, I'm glad we have guidance now. Don't do that. You heard us both say we don't recommend it. There's something to be said though for your experience though. Like, you saw, hopefully, it sounds like a recognition. I think I need some labor and delivery experience. I'm going to go get that. I'm going to do this alongside. And it just kept going for you. Maybe it was your thing.
Yes. And I was the same way too, Jamie. I did not have kids. I was not married at the time. My wonderful partner, who's now my husband, was active duty military and mostly deployed overseas. So there was no even like mild distraction. I did find time to ski though. You better bet. Somewhere between night shift in school, like there was skiing. But yeah, it isn't a sustainable approach. And I think I realize now working as a midwife, how like demanding it can be, like emotionally, physically, energy, that you really don't set yourself up for success, like going through school, you know, running on fumes and then stepping into a very energy demanding job. Like in terms of sustainability, like taking that step back and feeling like you can go for the long term. Like, I guess you just don't know as a student, you don't know what you're getting yourself into. but that first job, my first job was, you know, where you currently work. And ooh, like, I think had I known I wouldn't be sleeping, you know, ever, I would have slept during school a little bit more.
That's true. So the other thing too, is I think we don't teach well in the graduate program, whether you're in a master's or a DNP. We don't teach how to be a sustainable midwife. Like, we don't set you up to think about your career in 10, 20, and 30 year increments. And how do you graduate school and then practice so that you don't feel like you're running on fumes or that you burn out? I feel like sometimes we have some burnout and people kind of ebb and flow out of clinical practice because of that. Oh my goodness.
Absolutely.
I think that should be a course, a whole course in midwifery training, maybe a 4-week webinar series or something. Let's talk about sustainability in your practice.
Okay. And I think those habits have to start in school too. And the challenge I see with my students, because now I am in education as well, is that, you know, they're doing the same thing. They may not be working full time, but they have family and children and like other things in their life, and they're doing full-time school. So they are already perpetuating that cycle that it's okay to be like, you know, battery on 1%, like running through life. And so I don't necessarily know how we break that habit, because lives, I think a lot of part-time programs or programs offering part-time progression plans are trying to do that to make it more sustainable, not to make it longer or more of a financial burden, but like, it's hard, Jamie, like it, you see it, I see it happening in students and you're like, no, like, how do I help you change this? And I don't have the answer. If you do, by all means, come talk to my students, please.
Okay. I think I will say this though. Once you graduate, I think midwives are much more particular about the jobs they're taking. For a while there, it was take the only job that you can, because that might be the only thing you're offered. And you're going to work 80 hours a week and you're going to be running back and forth to different hospitals and you're going to be seeing all these patients and you're going to be compensated below what you should. And now I think the market has changed a little bit where we're compensating better and midwives are saying, I can't be on call that much. I have to sleep and I have to have a family, or right, one suffers if you don't find the balance. You either have the career or you have the family and social life, and we're still learning. We're still learning, Jamie. Let's get that.
Always lifelong learners.
We are. Okay. So you loved your program. I loved in-person training too. I did a very similar thing. I trained in Denver, but I was planning to go to an online school and then changed last minute because I thought, I need to be in person. I need to see my cohort and have lunch with them and coffee. And so I understand all of what you took away from that. How did you prep for boards? How did boards go? And how did you find your first job?
Sure. So I thankfully feel like the University of Utah did a phenomenal job prepping us for boards in that last semester. As you approach, you know, you're doing integration. We did a lot of board prep, you know, a lot of practice exams, practice questions. And so that's really, I mean, I followed their lead and I took boards the second I could. Like there was no gap. It was like graduate. And I think it was maybe 10 days later that I had my approval letter and I was taking it. Mostly maybe out of fear that sleep deprivation would catch up to me and I'd forget everything. But I do think that boards prep, like it's very much about what you know about yourself. If you feel good about the material and you're testing well throughout that last semester, like I think it makes sense to just take it right away. But if you feel like you have gaps, you're scoring lower in some of those sections on practice exams, practice questions, like by all means, take that time. You want to walk into that test feeling confident. And I I like, you know, can see the argument for both ways. I did have a job lined up. So for my last semester, so I did a dual program, CNM and Women's Health and P. And for my last semester, I set up my own Women's Health and P practicum in Virginia, because that is where my now husband was stationed at the time. And I wanted to be present when he came back from deployment. Like, so that was very internally motivated. But I did a phenomenal, you know, WHMP practicum rotation at Planned Parenthood in Virginia Beach, in their family planning section. And while I was there, I was able to like network a little bit, apply for jobs, and have things lined up for when I graduated. So I got very lucky in that regard. And that's how I ended up with that first job at Riverside. I think that, I mean, basically sums up how, like, I don't know, it all fell into place. I got very lucky. Sam, again, sister of the year, was the one who found me the preceptor in Virginia Beach, because she met somebody at a colposcopy training who happened to be a WHNP in Virginia Beach. So really, my life success, I owe to her. And everything else kind of just fell in line. I think so not helpful to people out there.
Give credit where credit's due. But the other thing I will say, I was just talking to another group of midwives this week about that. There is so much power in networking. And it's not just networking for you. It's networking to say, I have these 10 midwives in my back pocket that are willing to precept and are located around the nation, so that when somebody does come across your path, you can say, I know somebody. I know somebody for you. Right? I think it helps grow the whole profession.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so your first job, because I can say this because I work there, it's like trial by fire at our hospital because we're so busy and there's very little sleep. And how was that as your first job out of school? What did you think?
I had not been introduced to that model of care in school. In Utah, midwifery is very well known. There are midwifery practices. They have great working relationships with physicians, but they're not necessarily integrated. At least this is how it was when I went through school. And this is how I was, you know, observing midwifery and their models of care throughout rotations. So to come into a like high volume, somewhat high risk collaborative group practice was just a very different kind of change of pace and a different utilization of midwives than how I had envisioned myself being like kind of used and of service. I loved that job and hated that job. Like, I don't know how I can kind of, I am so thankful. I came in as the like first hire of midwives there. So there was a large, you know, physician group. For those of you who aren't familiar with the practice, they wanted to add midwives. They added three of us over the course of about 4 months, but didn't necessarily know how to utilize us at the time. We were all new graduates. Every single one of us was a new grad nurse midwife. and so there was definitely a learning curve on how we best work together, that we, you know, weren't just there to maybe make other people's lives easier, but that we served a purpose and like kind of delineation of scope. And like, you know, that all took some time, but I am so thankful, Jamie, for that job, because I learned so much. I feel like the physician like support that I had was phenomenal. I'm sure they would sometimes leave you, you know, with multiple patients on the board and go get their haircut or whatever, but they were always receptive to answering questions, supporting you when they needed to, you know. But it was a hard first job. Mm-hmm. It was a hard first job. And I am so thankful. I am still, you know, good friends with the midwives that I started with. I know you've interviewed Kelly as well on the podcast. And I am also very thankful for my sister during this period of time, as she has, you know, had been a midwife for a little bit, like, you know, a year and a half or so when I stepped into practice. And it was so therapeutic to have somebody to even debrief generally with, like, you know, not specifics about a patient or anything non-HIPAA compliant, but just coming home and being like, gosh, like, I had a hard day. I like feel spent. I don't know if I made the right decision on XYZ. Like, to have a safe place in somebody who understands that was huge. Like, she was absolutely a mentor for me. And really, like, I think every new grad needs a person in their corner like that, whether it's someone they work with or not, but just to be like, hey, can I talk to you? Like, man, like, I broke someone's water today and dropped a cord. Like, you know, like, you just have to have somebody who gets it. And I think, you know, that really helped me get through the 2 years that I was there. But I was sad to leave that job, Jamie. When my husband got PCS'd, I like cried in the call room to Dr. Hanke, to one of the physicians there, and was like, we have to move. Like, right when you feel like you're like, you're doing it well, like you've got your groove down, the 2 year mark, I feel like that's really formative. Like, you know, it's a milestone, and, you know, we were being some elsewhere.
Then off you went. Okay. So you left, and where did you go? Where did you go next?
So we were relocated technically to Stennis, Mississippi, but it's thankfully right on the border of Louisiana. New Orleans is the largest big city, and that was where I was able to find work. Mm-hmm. Was within New Orleans. Yeah.
And then were you doing hospital, birth center, home birth? What were you doing there?
Sure. So honestly, I thought when I moved there, there was no way that they were going to have nurse midwives. There was no way I was going to have a job, right? Everybody knows the Deep South is a little bit behind the times. But I found a phenomenal practice that was a true midwifery practice that had an alongside midwifery center. So they had a birth center attached to the hospital, but had privileges in both, where they could deliver in the birth center, but also manage inductions, transfers, people who wanted epidurals, who didn't want the birth center. And I believe it's only one of like a handful in the nation that's set up that way, where it's actually like connected to the hospital. Super cool. The only downside was that this was COVID. This was, you know, during the COVID, you know, excitement that happened in the world. And for like nursing staffing, we basically had to shut down the birth center for like a year and a half plus because of like nursing staffing and like, you know, infectious control and logistics and things like that, which was a shame. But I did get to deliver a handful of patients in that birth center when we reopened. And it was such a contrast, again, to like the type of practice that we worked at before. It's just such an interesting comparison, because our scope was so wide and so broad at Riverside, where it was really supported that you practice to the highest scope, you know. Sometimes to moments where you had to be like, no, I don't want to round on the antepartum, like 28 week PPROM twins. Like, you know, like, you know, sometimes you're like, maybe I should round with MFM, you know, like to coming to a place where it was much more of a cropped scope, where we didn't manage our own preeclampsia patients. Like, you could labor them, but you know, the resident team would manage blood pressures and meds. Like, it's just, it was a very interesting transition to go from being trusted, you know, to kind of the fullest scope, to like the odd ones out, if that makes sense. Like, the midwifery practice did, you know, the least amount of deliveries at the hospital that I was at compared to the physician groups. So you were kind of the anomaly. The nurses weren't used to like working with you. They weren't used to intermittent monitoring. Like, they all thought we were crazy for delivering in tubs. Yet here in the heart of New Orleans, like, we were doing tub birth in a hospital. Like, that is pretty phenomenal. Like, that, you know, speaks volumes to the progress that has been made. But it was a huge contrast from job to job. Yeah. Huge contrast.
I can see that, especially working where I am and you were at Riverside, and then going into something like that. I think when you're talking about the scope of practice and the whole spectrum that we can or should practice at, those are very, very different. But great that they're doing tub birth in the Deep South, like you said. I mean, that's a huge, it's just a little spark of light that I hope kind of starts to light up the whole area, right? It only takes one place and then word starts to spread. So hopefully that's our light down there in the South, especially in the state of Louisiana.
Absolutely. And what's so beautiful about water birth in the hospital is that it was 100% started like by a midwife. There was one midwife who was practiced there for forever. Her name is Kathy Vado, and she was like the one who sprinkled tubs in all of these facilities, like, and somehow they stayed. Like, you know, somehow they stayed despite everything else kind of changing. And it's definitely a like a beacon of hope for change in the future and how we approach like maternal child health down there.
Yeah. Okay. So that was Louisiana, but you're not in Louisiana now. So how did you get to Tennessee?
Sure. Well, in true military spouse form, I followed my husband. my sweet husband separated from the Navy in June, this past June, June of 23, and embarked on a new journey of medical school. So we moved to Johnson City so he could start medical school at Quillen College of Medicine. So he is a M1, like, you know, bottom of the totem pole in terms of the medical society. But he knows talk before you touch, right? He knows about consent. He knows about therapeutic presence. Like he knows about, you know, some of the midwifery pillars. And hopefully that'll serve him well. But we moved here less than a year ago. And it's been a great transition. We're excited to be, you know, in Tennessee. But it has, you know, again, created another like kind of chapter for me and my career as well.
Okay, so what are you doing now? What are you doing in Tennessee?
Sure. So I am still practicing. I was so fortunate to find another nurse midwife in this area who was about a year ago starting a birth center. And it's private practice. She started it. We are not an accredited birth center because the beautiful home that we renovated does not meet architectural standards for, you know, like medical facilities. So the practice has become a really beautiful, like centralized home birth practice. Mm-hmm. So it is home birth, but it's home birth in what we call the birth cottage, like the home that we, the space we have created. But still, again, very much low intervention, low risk women, that kind of thing. So I'm fortunate enough.
A sign on the front of your door that says, we are not accredited because of architectural reasons, but we meet all of the criteria.
We like hold ourselves to the AABC standards because again, we believe in them and believe in having kind of, you know, very clear guidelines on what qualifies for like, you know, safe out of hospital birth. But we just avoid calling it a birth center. We call it the birth cottage.
Yeah. Now, is that your formal practice name? What's the official name if somebody was looking you up in Tennessee?
It's Streams of Life Birth and Wellness.
Okay. Now, are you only doing pregnancy and birth and postpartum care, or are you doing some well woman, GYN, primary care in the background?
Yeah, we are still doing well woman across the lifespan. You know, everything from your annual visits to problem visits, contraceptive counseling, all of that. I would say most patients, I feel like, find us because of pregnancy. And then, you know, you get a lot of your GYN patients because they stay with you afterwards, you know, which is very, I feel like, true to a lot of midwives' experience and what the public thinks is, sorry about puppy dog, what the public thinks, you know, midwives do.
Yeah, I agree. I think a lot of women and their families, they find their midwife and then they think we should just have a relationship forever. And midwives are like, yeah, that's what we do. Come on.
Oh my gosh. Come on. Yep.
Nope. Okay. So you're doing that and then you're teaching. Where are you teaching? Tell me a little bit more about that. And how did you get into it? What was the experience like going from practice and bedside stuff to now being, you know, the sage, if you will?
Absolutely. So my full-time job is as the program director for Loyola University New Orleans midwifery program, nurse midwifery. And some days I still don't know how I landed this job, Jamie. I feel so fortunate. A couple years ago when I was practicing in New Orleans, and my husband and I were, you know, kind of planning for life, planning our 5-year plan, you know, talking about starting our family. talking about medical school, the question of work-life balance and like how we juggled all the things kind of came up. I have always loved teaching. That was actually part of how I paid my way through undergrad, was serving as a teaching assistant for nursing students at the University of Utah to stipend my tuition in school. And I've always just enjoyed kind of that aspect of it. So I decided to kind of branch out and teach adjunct while I was working in New Orleans and just see, okay, if my husband's going to be a full-time medical student and I want to grow my family and we will be on one income, like what does all of these pieces look like? And how do I not set myself up for, you know, perinatal mood disorders and like being overwhelmed and all of that, especially in a new location where we don't have family support. So the decision was very multifactorial, but it was premeditated. So I stepped into adjunct teaching at Loyola New Orleans. Again, lucky enough that there were multiple, like, you know, colleges of nursing in New Orleans. I really loved the Jesuit model. So Loyola is a Jesuit institution, which focuses on holistic care and holistic care of their students and like, you know, really growing and supporting their mind, body, and spirit, which I loved. So I stepped into that role teaching in the undergrad, loved it, enjoyed it. The very first class I taught was evidence-based practice, which students hate, but I love, you know, I'm like into it. I'm like, this is going to change your life. And they're like, oh God, do I have to write a paper? but I absolutely loved it. And then continued to adjunct teach, you know, stepped into the graduate program, teaching in their DNP, teaching some of the FNP courses. And then found out that Loyola was starting a midwifery program. So prior to what, a year and a half ago, there were no nurse midwifery programs in the state of Louisiana at all. So all of the, you know, midwives there were midwives who had either trained elsewhere and moved there or had done distance programs like Frontier or Georgetown. But again, Louisiana has, I think, the second lowest number of practicing midwives to Mississippi. And part of that is like, we don't have any, you know, we don't have any way to train them. They're not utilized. People don't know about them. We're not growing, you know, kind of the population or profession here. And the dean of the College of Nursing at Loyola is a nurse midwife, which is awesome and very rare, again, for nurse midwives to hold kind of such high positions in academia. And like decided we are starting a nurse midwifery program. This is how we change or be part of the change for maternal child outcomes in the state. And it was really, I think, beautiful kind of like timing. I happened to work with Shelley Collins as like colleagues at the birth center in New Orleans, you know, kind of had a foot in a door with Loyola and had this kind of like love and plan to step more into teaching. So I ended up in this role, like as the nurse midwifery program director. And I tell myself all the time, like, I know I'm qualified for this position, but you know, imposter syndrome is real. But I also joke all the time with my husband, like there are so few midwives in Louisiana, like who practice in Louisiana, who hold license in Louisiana, like especially ones with doctoral degrees, like which is needed for this, like, you know, it made my competition pool pretty small. But I am so thrilled to be in this position. And now we have our first cohort of students who are in their second semester. And we're trying to grow the size and the diversity of the midwifery profession in our state, because we really do believe that it's part of the solution to our atrocious maternal mortality and morbidity statistics.
Yes. Yes, I agree. I don't think that you are an imposter at all. I think you're fully qualified. You just walked through your beautiful breadth of experience, and you're obviously passionate about being an educator. And I feel like you have to have the passion to be in the academic setting, because if you don't have that fire to say, this is why we need you and this is the change, everybody can teach the content, but it's the passion behind it that I think really says, it says, this is what midwifery is about, instead of just, this is what a midwife is. You're like, no, this is why we need to change the system. Oh my goodness.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, you're so spot on, Jamie, and saying like you can, anybody can teach like XYZ, like this is the, you know, pathology and the disease and the management. But so much of midwifery isn't what we do, it's how we do it, right? Like it's the approach we have with our patient, the model of care, like it's the how. And that piece is, I think, the most exciting part of being in midwifery education. It's like connecting the dots for your students of like, yes, you memorize these things and you know, but it's how you take this information and share it with your patient, how you shift the power into their hands, like, and how you like, you know, respect and empower them to make their own decisions. Like that is midwifery. That's not on boards, but that is midwifery. And like, that's why we love this profession.
Oh my gosh. Key takeaway there. That is not on boards, but it's such an important piece of practice. Gosh. Yes.
Absolutely.
Okay, so I have a question about what work looks like across all of your different hats you're wearing right now, week to week. So how many hours are you working with the program director and the birth cottage? What does that look like? And then behind the scenes, husband is in medical school, so he is probably busy. But how are you managing, you know, marriage and then other social aspects? How do you do it all?
Sure. Well, like you said before, JB, we are always learning and evolving and figuring it out. I actually had a sweet, like potential, like student, someone who's interested in nurse midwifery school, email me basically the same question the other day of like, hey, how do you balance practicing and teaching? And I thought, ooh, how do I? but right now, so my full-time job is definitely Loyola, and I have no idea how many hours I work for them a week, because you're kind of like always working on little things. But because I'm in Tennessee, I'm remote, which means I have like a lot of flexibility. I am teaching Tuesday and Thursday nights, evenings. That's when my live class is with my students right now. So that's when we kind of zoom in and have our sessions together. But the rest of the week is pretty flexible in terms of like what time I start in the morning, what time I end in the morning, as long as I'm getting done, you know, the things that I need to get done, which is so different than, you know, the traditional midwife schedule of like, you show up at clinic, you're here, here to here, you're on call, you know? So that's definitely been a, like a new challenge and a learning experience of like, okay, just because you're home doesn't mean, you know, you can't be like, you aren't productive, right? Like you're home, kind of trying to set those boundaries between what is work time and what's home time, I think has been the greatest challenge of working remotely. But, you know, everyone else figured it out in 2020. So I should be able to figure it out 4 years later, right? For the cottage, our practice is relatively low volume right now. So my practice partner and I, we take like maybe 4 clients a month. And we just divide up our call days. We have had a lot of very long primiparous labors recently. So we've actually been kind of tag teaming most of the deliveries as like a leg one and leg two. Like somebody does, you know, the active labor support, the management. And then, you know, when we get close to second stage, calls in that second midwife. And then that second midwife, you know, does the postpartum care, like that kind of piece to break up those really long labors that, you know, just happen sometimes. So that's been really nice in terms of kind of dividing and conquering, and also having another nurse midwife to like, you know, talk through things with as this practice grows, because we're still within our first year of practice. In, you know, home birth is just different than hospital birth, different than birth center birth. You are farther from resources, so you have to be more conscious of, you know, kind of the level of risk and assessment, and making sure that you're always thinking forward and looking forward while holding, you know, space for the present with that family, you know, and what they're going through. So yeah, I have one clinic day a week that I go and I practice and I see my patients for my like outpatient clinic, my prenatals and my GYN. And yeah, then I take call 3 days a week, but most of those call days are nothing like the Riverside call days.
Oh my
most
God.
of those call days there's nothing going on. And yeah, it's just different. It's different. So far it's been working well in terms of work-life balance. We did have a week where we had, of course, three gals labor every other day, you know, like where you're like, statistically, how does this happen? But it, you know,
yes,
it does.
I remember when we had a home birth for my fourth baby in 2022, and he was the third baby born that 24-hour period. And I remember my midwife team showed up, and they were tired. They were so tired because they were like, "This is the third baby," and we all thought the baby would be here much sooner than he was. And I remember they left, and they were like, "We have just worked a 24-hour shift with three births, and that is a lot for a home birth team." Yes.
Absolutely.
Now, speaking of home birth, you have had hospital, birth center, and home birth settings. Do you feel like your program at Utah prepared you well to go into each of those, or did you have to learn along the way, or a combination of both?
Sure. I would say that they did the best that could have been done for like an individual who doesn't have that lived experience, right? We did, I think, visit a freestanding birth center and a nurse midwife in Utah as one of our, you know, extracurricular kind of days. We had simulation in different settings, you know. I think if anything, I felt more prepared for the lower risk, like labor sitting and support, because that was the population that I saw primarily in my clinical rotations. Than the management of some of the higher risk stuff that we had the privilege of participating in at the hospital-based practice. So I don't think you ever learn, you know, everything. You'll ever be completely prepared from school alone. But I'm so thankful to have practiced in different environments and to see both the pros and cons, right? Like the benefits and the challenges of the different models of midwifery care. And there isn't one perfect one. Like I have students ask me all the time, like, what does the schedule look like for a nurse midwife? And you're like, well, that depends on a lot of things, right? Practice setting, patient volume, number of midwives, like expectations from patients.
Yeah, where yeah. You in the United States makes a difference.
Absolutely. And it's amazing. It's much like nursing where like, you can practice in such a wide array of settings and models. I think that's great. I think that gives nurse midwives options, that gives patients options. That's what we want, right? But it does take some time to figure out what best serves you, like your season of life, what you care about in terms of like what gives you fulfillment. Because I mean, you can attest to it. You feel like a badass when you have delivered 10 babies in 24 hours and ran it on 21 patients and everybody's healthy and safe. But you probably didn't meet a single one of those gals ahead of time. You did not know them. You did not labor sit with them, you know, like, you did your best to provide education and like, you know, empower them along the way, but you know, you ran from one delivery to another. Whereas, you know, I have never been, I feel like, more exhausted than I have been, like with a 28-hour primip labor support who like really needs you, you know, always making progress, but like definitely the slow end of normal. Like, I don't know. It's just so different. But then to know that person, have walked with them throughout the entire journey, know their family, know everything that they did to prepare for that, like, it is so rewarding to have that continuity, but it comes with being on call every other day, right? Like it's so interesting to compare. Like you have so many options as a nurse midwife, and that is amazing. But it's about figuring out what matters to you, right? Like what gives you fulfillment in your job? What boundaries are you okay having or not having between work and life? Because, you know, I've never had to think about like, oh, can I go for a hike? And here I'm like, oh, well, I do have somebody due and she is 40 weeks and she usually goes at 42. But like, if I'm, you know, doing an out and back and I'm an hour away, like, you know, just different things where, you know, hospital-based practices, you're on or you're off. And when you're off, you're completely off. Like, so it's just a really different setting. But I love that. I love that we have options. I just don't know what the right you know, I don't know what the perfect practice is for, at least for me and my family.
Yeah. And I think it's appropriate to expect you're going to have seasons. I think when you're young and you're, you know, freshly graduated and maybe you don't have kids or you're married, you can do those either long, you know, home birth shifts, or you could be working in the hospital nonstop and just love it every minute. And then something changes and you get married or you have kids or you move and you have to shift. And part of midwifery, if you have good training, they make it so that you can be very flexible. And that's the part that I love. Like the core of midwifery can fit anywhere. And then all the details you just adapt to. Yeah.
Absolutely. And yeah. I think the midwives again who practice until they're 70 are the ones who have adapted to the seasons, have found a way for it to be sustainable, to still be fulfilling, to like serve them through the many chapters of life. So I can't tell you how many nurse midwives now I've run into who have literally like are delivering babies in their 60s and 70s. It is phenomenal. And they have found what works for them. Like, and you're like, that's like, that is what I want. I want to love in like this profession so much that I continue doing it even, you know, into my later years, because I can, because I enjoy it, because I haven't burnt out, you know, like that's beautiful. That's the goal that I have for every one of my sweet midwifery students, if they so choose. Okay. But I would love for them to still feel called to the profession and still feel like they enjoy it, you know, 30, 40 years from now.
Yes. Yes. So there is some good, I think it came out this year, I'm not sure, and I cannot remember the name of the, maybe Bree Thumb, I can't remember. I'm sorry if I butchered her name. She is studying, there's a 5-year burnout rate for midwives. So midwives that are going back to school, and then at 5 years, they just, they're running on fumes and they run out of gas. Using like you have found kind of those footholds along the way, can you point to anything that has helped you find sustainability? Do you feel like it's the hikes, or you had the mountains, outdoor nature, if that's what kind of fills you back up? What specifically do you feel like has worked for you? I think some of it you've spoken to, you found those relationships along the way that have been really helpful, but you've had a lot of experience in a short time. So something is behind the scenes helping you to fuel the fire.
Yeah, I wish I knew, Jamie. I think being a military spouse forces you to adapt and change. And I think if I do anything well, it's like I'm good at being new at something, like, you know, feeling like a novice again. Because you do, when you move every 2 years, you feel like you start all over. Learning the doctors and building relationships and, you know, like learning, getting to know your patients and being okay with kind of the continuum of learning, I think is a powerful tool. But I also think that you have to define your values. Like my husband and I have a set of values that guide every decision we make. And it's easy to make decisions when you have like, these are our core values. This is our order of operations. Like family health service is ours. And so that guides our decision making when it's like, oh, you know, what do I do at this turn? Like, how does this impact my values? I don't know. When you get really clear on what matters to you, I do think that that helps in some of those more critical moments of like, oh, is this serving me? Is this serving my purpose? Like, does this align with my values? I love being outside. I'm sure it has helped. I did not get outside a lot in Louisiana because it was hot and swampy and hurricaney. But I survived that period, you know, like I think knowing yourself and knowing what really does pour back into your cup, and finding little moments, little ways to kind of refuel is pretty powerful.
Yeah,
but
I think a lot of what you said too about being new, that is a really great skill, both a hard and a soft skill, I think. But how many times have you seen a patient where they have XYZ that you've never seen before, and now you're looking up what that diagnosis is and how to manage it, and you're asking your doctor, and you're thinking like, I've never seen this before, and it's this new thing, and think it's just, it's a skill that, like you said, we're always learning. And so being able to be the new person and be good at being the new person has definitely been a strength for you.
Absolutely. I think it's the humility of knowing that no matter how long you're a midwife, like, birth will always surprise you. Things will always, like, not, I don't, you know, how many times have you had like a patient that you're like, oh, I'm sure it's going to be like a fast labor, or no, she's not in labor. She's 37 weeks and 3 days and a first time mom. Like, she's probably just cramping. It's like, you just are continuously humbled by this profession. And so I do think it helps, even if you're not a good novice or you're not good at learning, like, this job kind of forces you, like, the second you think you know anything about anything, like, mm-hmm. you will be proven wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. A baby is going to come in a mama's labor. They're going to come in and humble you. Yes. Yes. Okay. I want to ask before I forget, across these states, how have you decided to maintain your licenses? I think we're seeing midwives move around the country a lot, and we're seeing them maybe say, I'm going to go work over here for a couple of years to get experience and come back. Have you decided to maintain your licenses in these prior states, or have you let them go? What have you done?
Sure. So I let my license expire in Virginia, mostly because my husband and I had no plans of returning to that location. Again, when you are active duty, like, you give up all freedom of knowing anything about your future. So it's a little bit of a gamble. I'm sure we could have ended up back there had he re-enlisted. But I've maintained everything in Louisiana, which I have to be teaching in Louisiana. And then now hold my license in Tennessee. But I will say, I do think the licensing process, I mean, state to state, there are differences, but like, that was one of the largest, I think, headaches for me as a new graduate, like, as somebody moving across state lines, you know, jumping through the hoops to be licensed in each and every state and to, like, you know, be licensed through endorsement versus like new license. There's just so many components to it. That if there's any, I feel like, advice I have to new grad is like, it's okay. It's hard for everybody. You will get your license, like, play the game,
mm-hmm.
you know, cry tear if you need to. I distinctly remember shedding many tears from the Louisiana State Board of Nursing when I was first moving there. But our orders were to Mississippi, because you have some exemptions as a military spouse. But then, of course, like, our orders didn't match the state I was going to practice in. And it was like, you know.
Yeah. One. Yes. But you did it. I feel like you persevered and you did it. You did it.
You have to
if you want to practice. You have to jump through the hoops if you want to practice. You have to. And then you finally get in the hospital and you catch a baby and you think, gosh, all those hoops, totally worth it. Totally worth it. Okay, let's see. Two other things. For school, did you take out loans or did you have scholarships? What'd you do? We know you worked. So was working to help pay for some of your tuition, or how did you pay for school?
Yeah, so I was fortunate enough to get through most of graduate school without taking out additional loans. I took out a fair amount of loans for my undergrad, and just felt, I don't know, the pressure of like, oh, I'm just going to add to this. Cool. So I did get some scholarship. I worked throughout and kind of paid as I went. And then I was able to stipend my tuition as well through like service to the university, through acting as a teaching assistant for the undergrad students or a clinical instructor. So between those pieces, I was able to get all the way up until my last semester of integration without having to take loans. And then integration, you work full-time as a midwife, essentially as a midwifery student. So I had to stop working. There was no way to do that. So that last semester I did utilize some federal loans for like living expenses and life. Yeah.
You have to eat. You have to eat. Amber, who is the main host of the podcast, I was asking her about scholarship stuff for a midwife nation. Like, if I give scholarships, who to give them? And she goes, you need to give them to students in integration because they are working full time and they still need to eat and they still need basic living. And that is such a blessing to have that help right at the end to boost you to graduation. And I thought, oh, such a wise idea. So maybe we'll get that off the ground soon. Okay, now today, Knowing everything you know, looking back, and you are working with students on a regular basis, but somebody that's considering midwifery as their journey forward, what would you say to them if they're just starting out? They maybe aren't even in school yet, and they're thinking, "I think I want to be a midwife." What is your wisdom you would offer them?
Oh man, so many things. I think more than anything, and I tell students this all the time, I tell candidates this in interviews, Jamie, like midwifery is a calling. We use it as a profession, but I believe it's like in your heart or it's not. Okay. I think I was a midwife before I knew I was a midwife, before my sister told me to be a midwife, before I met Anne Daenerys, the midwife. And I think, again, it's about the philosophy of care and the like, the value system and approach to patients, right? So I do think it's helpful, again, to like know your own values and know like, do these values of what brings me joy and what I prioritize and what I care about, do they align with the mission of this, you know, profession? If so, like, great, you're gonna love it, like 100%. If it doesn't line up and it's just, you know, you've worked in labor and deliveries for so long and this feels like the next step, or like, you know, then I would say like it's maybe not for you. Because it does require so much of us, even when we have good boundaries, even when we have good delineation of work and life and family. It is just an energy demanding job. And I think you have to love it. You have to feel called to it, or it like the benefit versus risk like won't pay off in the long term. Like you won't make it past 5 years and still practice. You won't, you know, still feel kind of the emotional pull at a mom meeting her baby for the first time, or like a successful VBAC. Like you, I don't know. I just feel like if you ever lose sight of the intimacy of those moments, then like you should be done, right? Like that's a step towards, I don't know. Like, I just don't think that's the kind of the care we want to provide as a profession. I'd also want midwifery students to know, like, if you really do feel called to it, it is the best job in the world. Like, I truly, truly believe it. It is such a privilege to be a midwife. It is better than I ever imagined. It's better than I even experienced in school. Like, it is so worth it. But it's also different than what you expect. You know, I remember even working as a nurse and thinking, you know, oh, if I were the provider, I would do this. Oh, I would just order the Cytotec, or I would just, you know, like it's easy, I think, to assume that you would know what to do in that position, but the weight that you feel, or the weight that you carry as a provider truly making decisions for and with patients, is so much heavier than I expected. And I think, again, it's easy to be backseat driver, right? It's easy to say like, oh, I know what to do. Like, but the actual decision-making piece of it, when it comes down to you, it's just heavier. Like, I don't know. That would be what I wish I had known, though I'm not sure I would have believed it.
No, I don't think anybody believes it. I had a midwifery professor, I'll never forget. She said, you'll do your first 50 births and you'll be a little bit timid and equally excited. And I'll be like, yes, like I'm finally catching the babies. And then you have your first 50 births after you graduate where you feel like a superhero. She was like, yes, like I am the best midwife in the world. And she goes, and then all the other births afterwards, you think like, what am I doing? Like you feel the burden of responsibility. And when things go beautifully, you're like, this was so great. And then you feel all of that other emotion and angst and just, did I make the right decision? I'm so glad this worked out well. And I think it's a good feeling. Like I've reflected on that a lot. And I think it helps us to center and say, am I making the best decision for the patient and the family? But I don't know how to describe that to somebody that hasn't felt that. I think you have to just walk it.
Yeah, it's lived experience, 100%.
Yeah. Okay. Any advice to students on looking for jobs? Because I feel like you have some wisdom there. Talking about salary or maybe different things with contracts or benefits. Anything that you're like, I wish I would have learned this lesson, or somebody would have told me this.
Sure. I mean, I definitely think that the tide is turning, as you mentioned before, in new graduates not feeling like they have to take the first job that's offered to them. And that is a good thing. I was lucky. I took the first job that was offered to me and it turned out, you know, in my favor. But it was 100% out of fear that I wouldn't get a job otherwise. And I was somebody limited by geographic location. And I think that's when like the pressure is really on. It feels really high, especially if you live or want to work in an area where there aren't a ton of options for nurse midwives. Like, I like understand that pressure, but do not settle, because this is your day in and day out, like work-life balance, work fulfillment, like job satisfaction, you know, like you gotta be in the right. It's gotta fit the mark. It's gotta check the boxes for you, right?
Yeah.
Write down your priorities. Make sure the job meets your priorities. Okay. Your priority list can't be like 10 things. Should be like two or three. Like, this is what matters to me. That's what we need. Okay. Kind of that hierarchy. I think that's huge. And then also, like, just don't be afraid to be persistent or creative. I, you know, have reached out to people who have told me no before, only to reach out again and have them, you know, say, oh, actually, and not in, you know, like an annoying badgery way, but just a like, hey, I really believe that I'm a good fit for what you need. Like, your organization aligns with my values. Here we are with values again. Like, I just think sometimes it takes putting yourself out there, to figure out, I don't know, to land in the right spot. I did not get the job that I have now through a job portal online or an application. Like, it was 100% through networking. It was through Ginger Breedlove, of all people, who was consulting our practice and trying to help us like not crumble in New Orleans, because of some big kind of system changes, and like being open and honest and like being like, hey, if you have any previous graduates or friends who work in this area, let me know. And it turns out she did and put me in contact with my like current partner. I don't know. I think you just have to be creative, if that makes sense. In terms of benefits, man, I feel like I still don't understand benefits well, which is a horrible thing to say. I know that. But don't be afraid to like ask the questions, you know, talk with the representatives, like, you know, not be annoying, but like get the information that you need so you feel like you understand it well. I have not done a good job of that. I should take my own advice. I think I have like four different 401ks from all these jobs I've moved around and like have no idea, like have never combined them. You know, I'm just a little bit of a mess. 65-year-old me will regret it, but
we'll talk offline. We'll get you figured out retirement wise.
Thanks.
No, but I do think that that's really good advice. I think if you're expected to write for narcotics or opioids or whatever it is in your state, you know, does your practice pay for your DEA? Because that's a huge expense. Last year I was calculating up what's the average amount it costs to be a midwife. It is over $1,000 a year. I think upwards of $2,000 to $3,000 a year, just in your licenses and your certifications and your different things you're maintaining. And I don't think people realize that. I think they're like, oh, midwifery school is going to cost, you know, X amount of money. And then, you know, I'll just have my licenses, but there is so much else you have to maintain and get your stuff kind of coordinated together year after year. And those expenses add up. And if your employer will pay for some of them, it helps.
Absolutely. And I do feel like sometimes employers can't budge on actual salary. Like, you know, if it's one of those kind of blanket systems where you start at this, and, you know, so many years of experience, it goes up, but they usually have more wiggle room for things like CEU money and, you know, paying for additional training in education, paying for these fees. Like, that's sometimes where you can negotiate. But there's power too in knowing your worth. If anybody's ever unsure of how to like, you know, pitch themselves in terms of salary, again, Grow Midwives and Ginger Breedlove is like 100% the go-to. But knowing what you're worth in your area, knowing, you know, what kind of revenue you're going to generate, like RVUs, again, are something nobody teaches you in school, but have such a direct impact on so many nurse midwives' salaries and, you know, productivity and what they, you know, the institution thinks they're worth and things like that. So there's definitely a lot of pieces of being a midwife that I feel like we don't do a great job of educating our students in or like prepping them for. But again, you know, we also all have to pass boards, right? Like, I get it. It's like,
we're always learning, Jamie. We're always learning.
Always.
Yes, we are always learning. Okay, I love Grow Midwives. What other resources do you love? What are the things you find you're recommending to students? Anything kind of in the background you're working on too? Any passion? You have many hats. I feel like plenty of things to do, but anything on the side that you're like, this is my other passion project that I love. So resources, passion projects, what do you have going on there?
Sure. Well, I will say my favorite resource for students is actually A Midwife Nation. I send students there all the time. I post your blog pages, Jamie, literally like in my weekly check-ins with students of like, hey, this is a phenomenal resource. So that's one of my favorites, at least for like students. I find like a lot of my recommendations for students who are in school, like in the thick of it, are a lot of the resources that remind you about your why when you're like studying all the things and you're in a pharmacology textbook and like, you know, doing your evidence-based practice projects and all sorts of things, it's easy to forget about your why. So I recommend a lot of, you know, like the Birth Hour podcast, Journey to Midwifery, like things that remind them of like, oh, hey, like here's a really positive birth story. Like here's a really, like a really awesome conversation about something you care about that you can listen to on your 15-minute walk, like trying to bring them back to like the core of what matters while we're jumping through all the hoops of boards and learning all the algorithms that you can look up, that you can absolutely look up the second that they have to all. So right now my students are literally memorizing the United States Preventive Services Task Force grade A and B recommendations for all counseling and all screening, because that's covered on boards. Yet I have never once like pulled that out of my memory. I have always looked it up because it changes every year. Yet they're like memorizing.
It also changes on where you live. Like I have seen HIV and syphilis in different states, in different places, based on different regulations. I mean, you always have to figure it out where you are. Yes.
But we expect our students to memorize it. So again, yeah, I feel like I have app recommendations. The ASCCP, yeah. I use all the time. LactMed, I use all the time. Mommy Meds, you know, those kinds of just, again, quick, easy references. Because I will never for the life of me remember like, okay, what can I give to a breastfeeding mom in terms of like this antibiotic and this, like, I always look it up. I won't lie to you. I will always look it up. There's a few that, you know, decloxacillin, you're like, I know that one's fine. But you know, like you're always referencing things.
We are. You're always looking things up. Even if you're like, I think I know it because you've been awake for 23 hours, you're like, let me just look it up really quick. Or I think I run into this more and more often. The pharmacy doesn't have it. And then I'm like, okay, well, let me find plan B for your medicine. And you know, I'm looking at, or they have 10 allergies and you're like, okay, I can't give you this. I can't give you this. I can't give you this. I can give you this. And that's, you know, your fourth choice.
Yeah. Absolutely.
I love it.
And then
those apps too, I empower women to use. I'm like, download this, because if you're out of town and you have mastitis and you go to urgent care, like double check what your provider is giving you if you are breastfeeding. Like know that that's okay, in case you can't get a hold of your, you know, midwife or birth practice at home.
I love that. I love that. Again, shifting the power to our patients.
Okay. Any last wisdom or advice? I love all your tips. I love your journey so much. Anything else you want to just say to anybody out there, students, preceptors, frontline midwives, people that think this might be their calling? Final last words.
I don't think I have anything meaningful to conclude with. You know, I just think we're so privileged to get to do this every day, that patients let us do this, you know, like that they allow us to care for them and trust us with their decisions and, you know, babies and families. And I just, again, like remain thankful, like practice gratitude. And I do think that that helps you remember the why when you are rounding on patient 21 at 4 a.m. or, you know. pushing for hour four with your sweet primate who makes just enough progress that you can't call it, you know? So.
And you're thankful. Mm-hmm. I always think in those moments, I'm grateful we're making continued progress. This baby yes. is going to come out. We're almost there.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I agree with you. I think it's the best job in the world. Best calling in the world. I hate to use the word job, but best calling in the world.
Wow. Absolutely.
Oh my gosh. Okay, Jamie. Are you on social media at all or anything where we can find you? We can find you as the program director at Loyola University. If you're looking for Jamie.
You can. I am not on social media, but for any students interested, of course, Loyola University New Orleans does have like an Instagram page and Facebook page and post all about the different programs. And if anybody's in the East Tennessee area and looking for midwives, of course, Streams of Life, Birth and Wellness, we're happy to serve, you know, the Tri-Cities area in East Tennessee.
My goodness. Well, thank you so much for being on the podcast, Jamie.
Thank you for having me. It's so fun to get to chat with you and talk about all the things that we love. Midwifery.
It's our love hour. It is. Okay. Bye, Jamie.
Bye.
All right. Thanks for listening. And I hope you guys will tune in again next time. Remember, you can email me at journey2midwiferypodcast@gmail.com. And I'm on Facebook and Instagram as Journey to Midwifery Podcast. Send me your suggestions, or if you'd like to be on the podcast, I would love to hear from you. Until next time.